This is chapter 8 of Dispensationalism versus Christian Identity. The topic is the aftermath of World War I. If we all will stand, I will read you the two scriptures from Revelation 20, verse 7 and 8, which says, "And when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison. And Satan shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea." You may be seated. History is fascinating. If you just had a little idea about who is who, it would be harder for the media to fool you. They still can, but it would be harder. When ex-President Trump left his indictment hearing, he went to a Cuban restaurant and bought everyone a meal who was there. But there was something strange that happened after he made his announcement to provide this service. What was it? A prayer was said for all the participants in the meal bought by the ex-president. But it wasn't just the prayer that was said, it was who said the prayer. It was a Jewish rabbi. Which God was he praying to? For he is an anti-Christ. I've heard Republicans say that the southern border is wide open, and the Biden administration wants it that way. Then they add, "I don't know why they are doing this." The answer to their question is easy. They want it that way because they are communists. Communists want open borders. Marxism is communism. Black Lives Matter is an organization that was sponsored by the Marxists. BLM freely admits it. The three black women Marxists who were the head of this organization are lesbians. They received so much money after the death of fatally drugged George Floyd that some of the founders spent much of the money on multimillionaire mansions and on friends who did so-called security for them. They resigned from BLM when their embezzlements were found out. Of the money given to BLM, very little of it went to help the black community, but a lot of it went to help themselves. They suffered nothing for their larceny and fraudulent behavior. No jail time, no fines, no giving back anything that they fraudulently bought, no tax evasion, no probation, no criminal charges, no nothing. Very similar to what happened to Hunter Biden. The foundation of Marxism is atheism. Karl Marx, son of a Jewish rabbi, anti-Christian, is the father of communism. He called for the centralization of all power by the state and government control of all factories and enterprises, the means of production. He stated that religion was the opium of the people and wrote that man is the highest being, not God. Saul Alinsky, an anti-Christian, was the person who both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Obama was born of a Jewish communist mother. Looked to as they promoted the infiltration of community organizations to revolution against the American Christian system. The Democratic Party is the new Communist Party in America. The Republican Party is running a close second. It's going to be very interesting to see what will happen as Biden has enough evidence to reveal to put him and most of his progressives and his party in jail for a lifetime, if not having their life ended, if that's still allowable. Hunter, after 5 years of investigation, was found to agree to no jail time, just probation, for tax evasion and wrong information on a gun purchase, and there was no information taken from his laptop. It was as if the laptop did not exist. What has happened to the first nation that was started as a Protestant nation? There were very few Catholic or Jews in the nation when it began, and they were forbidden to hold office, vote be on the jury, and other significant things in the nation. It's been long gone. And it didn't last very long. It hasn't been a Protestant nation for over a century and a half, for it has turned into a Catholic-Jewish nation. Got a quiz for you. Question. What country had these different viewpoints guaranteed by its constitution? It was a republic. The government is made of a president, a prime minister, and a parliament. Representatives of the people had to be elected every 4 years by all men and women over the age of 20. The term of the president was 7 years. All orders of the president needed to be endorsed by another high official. An article in the Constitution allowed the president to suspend civil rights and operate independently in an emergency. Two legislative bodies were formed to represent the people. All citizens of this nation were equal and have the same rights and responsibilities. All citizens had the right to freedom of expression. All citizens had the right to peaceful assembly. All citizens had the right to freedom of religion. There was no state church. State-run public education was free and mandatory for children. All citizens had the right of private property. All citizens had the right to equal opportunity and earnings in the workplace. All citizens had the right to a Jewish usury bank. The answer as to what country followed these constitutional provisions will be given later in this sermon. Quick review of World War I. The Archduke of Austria-Hungary and his wife were assassinated in Sarajevo, Bosnia-Herzegovina by a Syrian nationalist. This was the catalyst that started World War I. But it was the three smaller nations of Bosnia, Serbia, and Romania that were at the center of the hostilities before the four targeted empires. That was the Ottoman, the Russian, the Austro-Hungarian, and the German. The territory of the three smaller nations had been the battleground of the Russo-Turkish wars in the previous century, and now they were once again in the right in the middle of the war zone of destroying the four world empires. The goal was to replace these four existing continental empires with four democratically controlled continental unions. The globalists, who are the Jews, knew that a democracy could be influenced greatly by a controlled media and bribes to its politicians, while a monarchy was much harder to sway. And there were three other issues that the international banks had with Russia. The first issue, Napoleon of France granted emancipation to all the Jews in every nation that he conquered. Then after Napoleon was defeated, the Treaty of Vienna in 1815 kept the right of emancipation to Jews in every nation except Russia. Russia would not yield to the Kabbalistic power exerted on the treaty. A little over a century later, a Jewish hatred towards Russia would finally culminate in the 1907 Bolshevik Revolution. The Tsar, a monarch, was to be placed with communism, which was to be used to attack religions predominantly Christianity. The second issue, in the first quarter of the 1800s, many of the European governments were in debt to the Rothschild banks, so the Rothschilds figured they could use this as a bargaining tool. However, Tsar Alexander I of Russia, who was not in debt to the Rothschilds, thwarted their plan for a world government. Enraged by this, Nathan Meyer Rothschild swore that someday he or his descendants would destroy Tsar Alexander I's entire family and descendants. Third issue. In the middle of America's War of Northern Aggression, President Abraham Lincoln discovers that the Tsar of Russia, Alexander II, was having problems with the Rothschilds too. The Tsar was refusing their continental attempts to set up a central bank in Russia. The Tsar then gives President Lincoln some unexpected help. The Tsar issued orders that if either England or France actively intervened in the American so-called Civil War and helped the South, Russia would consider such action a declaration of war and take the side of President Lincoln. To show that he wasn't messing around, he sent part of his Pacific Fleet to port in San Francisco and the other part to New York. In addition, there was another reason for the war. The Jews did not have a Jewish-owned central usury bank in either the empires of the Ottoman Empire or Russia. The power behind the creation of these wars were the Rothschilds and their Jewish kindred. All four empires lost their monarchies, and in return, either got or kept their Jewish-owned usury central bank, which controls their country. Pretty slick. Why did America have to join the world effort? First reason was that the United States had to finance World War I by its new Federal Reserve System. Eustace Mullins. You know, this guy slept in the U.S. Congressional Library and did his research. He spent years studying this. This is what he said. He wrote in his book, Secrets of the Federal Reserve, in Chapter 8, it's entitled World War I. It's a quote from Eustace Mullins. Quote, by 1900, it was obvious that the European countries could not afford a major war. They had large standing armies, universal military service, and modern weapons, but their economies could not support the enormous expenditures. The Federal Reserve System began operations in 1914, forcing the American people to lend the Allies $25 billion, which was not repaid, although considerable interest was paid to the New York bankers. Continuing with this quote, the American people were driven to make war on the German people, with whom we had no conceivable political or economic quarrel. Moreover, the United States comprised the largest nation in the world composed of Germans. Almost half of its citizens were German descent, and by a narrow margin, one vote, Germany had been voted down as the national language. After our entry into World War I, Woodrow Wilson turned the government of the United States over to a triumvirate of his campaign backers. One, Paul Warburg, who was an antichrist. The character Daddy Warbox in the movie, musical, and comic strip A Little Orphan Annie was inspired by the life and times of Paul Warburg, was in control of the nation's banking system. Number two, this is the guy that supported Woodrow Wilson. Bernard Baruch, Antichrist, was appointed head of the War Industries Board with life and death powers over every factory in the United States. And the third, Eugene Meyer, an Antichrist, was appointed head of the War Finance Corporation in charge of the loan program which financed the war. Continuing with Eustace Mullins' quote, knowing that the overwhelming settlement of the American people during 1915 and 1916 had been anti-British and pro-German, our British allies viewed with some trepidation the prominence of Paul Warburg and Kuhn Loeb & Company in the prosecution of the war. They were uneasy about his high position in the administration because his brother, Max Warburg, was at the time serving as the head of the German Secret Service, unquote. What? Paul Warburg, a German Antichrist, was rewarded by the Kaiser, that's a German king, and was one of the individuals who started the Jewish Federal Reserve System in America, who handled large sums for Lenin and Trotsky, two of the communists who led the insurrection in Russia, had a brother in Germany who was the head of their secret service. Sounds good to me. Even England's royalty was German. The only country that was founded as a Protestant nation had Max Warburg, an Antichrist Jew of Hamburg, Germany, who took his apprenticeship under Lord Rothschild, another anti-Christian. Two of Max's sons, Antichrist, controlled the banking operations in Germany, while Paul and Felix, two of the other sons, Antichrist, were sent to America to work with Jacob Schiff, another Antichrist, at Kuhn Loeb. It was Paul Warburg, designed America's Federal Reserve System, whose first year of operation, 1914, coincided with the first year of World War I. There could have been no war without the creation of the Federal Reserve System. Secondly, there was another big issue that occurred. Russia quit fighting in the Great War after a little over 3 years. March 18, 1917, the Russian Revolution began. But Russia didn't quit fighting against the Central Powers until almost a year later, March the 3rd, 1918. The Triple Entente that started out as Great Britain, France, and Russia was now just Great Britain and France. Without the many Russian soldiers no longer fighting against the Central Powers, don't you think the Allies were in big trouble? March 3, 1918, the treaty ended Russia's participation in World War I, but it did not bring peace to Russia. Even before it was signed, the communists found themselves in a vicious civil war with the White Army, a group that wanted to restore the Russian monarchy. Second battle, the communists also faced opposition from various nationalist groups within the Russian Empire, each wanting its own independent country. The third issue, the country was filled with outlaws who hoped to acquire wealth and power amid the confusion. As a result, in some parts of Russia, no one was in control. An enormous suffering and loss of life among the civilian population resulted. It was not until 1920 that most of the fighting finally ended, and Vladimir Lenin and his followers could focus on turning Russia into a communist state. 2 years later, the communists gave the nation a new name, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. The Jews achieved their revenge. With Russia out of the war, it flipped the strength of the war to the Central Powers. With the major military forces of Russia no longer fighting against the Central Powers, they had the advantage of no major battles on their eastern front. The advantage was with the Central Forces to become the victors of World War I. What would have happened if the United States had remained neutral as their president had run on his campaign? But on August the 4th, 1917, a little more than 2 weeks after the Russian Revolution began, the United States Congress voted to enter World War I. The United States' first major battle was in March 28, 1918, in France, just 3 weeks after Russia's last battle. The United States of America gave the Allies the manpower and weapons to win the war. Within 8 months after America's first battle, the war was terminated. One of the reasons for America ending the war was because Russia left as a participant in the war on the side of the Allies. Russia, after leaving the fighting against the Central Powers, began to fight against the communists. The United States was not against Russia becoming a communist nation. I'll repeat that again. The United States was not against Russia becoming a communist nation. It was very much for it happening. In fact, they provided the men and the money for the change of government. They are responsible for making it happen. Germany was not defeated. But many German citizens thought that the German army had never been defeated and were ready to fight on. No battle was fought on German soil, and as a result, no battle was lost on German soil. The German army did not lose World War I on the battlefield, but was instead betrayed by certain citizens on the home front, especially those pesky Jews. The German government leaders who had signed the armistice on November 11, 1918, were denounced as November criminals. The November criminals were blamed for the treaty's harsh terms, and they were followed by resentment. The November criminals was a code name hiding those who were unpatriotic populists, were socialists and Bolsheviks, who were mainly populated by Jews. Although World War I started between Austria-Hungary and Serbia, it quickly shifted to focus on Germany, whose industrial capacity was an economic threat to Great Britain. Germany was portrayed as the prime opponent of World War I. Following the Treaty of Versailles, Germany was ordered to pay the war cost of all the precipitating nations, even though Germany had not actually started the war. This amounted to three times the value of all of Germany itself. Now, two quotes from Lights from the Last Days by Grattan Guinness, written in 1886. These quotes were provided to me by Rick Ibett, who said that the author, Grattan Guinness, quote, knew about the Jews being suppressed for 1,000 years. But he never realized they were the adversary, Satan, who when they came out of a bottomless pit, went out to deceive the nations. In his book, Life of the Last Days, written in 1886, the author says the following. The first quote is from page 165. This is written in 1886. Quote, the interval from Hadrian to Constantine, now those were Roman empires, they ruled from 117 AD to 337 AD, saw the Jewish people in measure prospering and flourishing in the hands of their exile throughout the Roman earth. They were not at first despised and oppressed by their conquerors, but rather the reverse. They obtained influence of the people and honor at court in Rome. And alas, they too often used both for the persecution of Christians. I made a comment. The Jews used their influence of both the people and the court to have the Romans persecute the Christians. Until when? Well, we go on with the quote. They gladly took part in the pagan persecutions of the early church, as in the case of the Venerable Polycarp in the time of the Empress Marcus Aurelius, showing that the overthrow of their nation and their own exile had nowise diminished their hatred to Christ and his disciples. As paganism and superstition lost their hold in the third century, the writings of Moses and the prophets rose in the appreciation of the intelligent, and from a combination of causes, the state of the Jews in the first three centuries gave little indication of the advent of the terrible experiences which were to seed and to be prolonged more or less over 1,000 years. My comment: the Jews were behind the persecutions that were done on the Christians during the Roman Empire. But the Christians eventually found relief from the Jews' hatred for Christ and his followers for, quote, more or less over 1,000 years, unquote. Now the second quote from Guinness's book is found on page 213. It says, number four, that since the middle of the last century, now it was written in 1886, so the last century be the 1700s. A complete change has passed over the Jews' condition, and the Jews have been everywhere uplifted, emancipated, recognized as equals by all nations, given rights and privileges as citizens, a share in popular representation, seats in councils and senates, a position among the aristocracy, and the national administration of the countries where they reside. They have risen to eminence in finance, in literature, in music, in war, in government, in politics, and in education. And their wealth has become enormous, their position secure, their influence great, and their scattered families reunited in one great national organization. His fifth point, that since the year 1808, efforts have been made to evangelize them. And that in recent years, very considerable numbers of them have been converted. Also, that within the last decade, a movement for accepting Christ as the Messiah of Israel has begun among themselves. Ever hear of Messianic Jewish churches? And though still only incipient, is promising to spread. Unquote. I gave my comment. Beginning right before the United States became a nation, the Jews experienced something that had never before happened in the history of the world. As a result, efforts were made to get many of the Antichrists converted. There were and are many efforts to convert the Jews, but it is a complete failure. No Jews have ever been or will ever be saved. The devil's genetic period were living in practically every country in the world and were influencing and deceiving most of the nations, if not all of them. With this knowledge, look at what the Jews have done to the European former empires after the end of World War I. When the war was culminated, there was this very unusual peace treaty. At this treaty, the victors sliced up the territory of the losers and gave them to form new countries. Does anybody know what were the new countries that were formed? And some of the best territories were given to their allies. The big three were representatives from Britain, France, and the United States. Germany was not invited. It kept the map makers very busy. All right, let's see what it was. Here's the map. The brown are the new nations. Yugoslavia was a new nation after World War I. Austria-Hungary was not a new nation, but Austria-Hungary used to be one empire. They were together. They split them into two separate nations. So they're two separate nations. New nation. Czechoslovakia was a new nation. Poland was a new nation. And look how Poland split Germany. That caused a problem, World War II. Poland's there. Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, and Finland were all new nations. So U.S., Romania, Bulgaria, Sweden, Denmark, Germany, Switzerland, Italy, they separated, created new nations. From the Baltic Sea to the Adriatic Sea. Now, where's the Baltic Sea? The Baltic Sea there, the Adriatic Sea. So from here to here. There were seven new nations formed, with two nations being split from the combined nation of Austria-Hungary. The new nations provide the shield. They provide a shield between the USSR, Romania and Bulgaria, and Sweden, Germany, Switzerland, and Italy. This is Europe in 1914. This is Europe in 1923. Do you see a difference? There's Germany. There's no Poland. There's no Czechoslovakia. There's no Yugoslavia. There's no these three countries up here. There's no Finland. There's Austria-Hungary. It's a big empire. There's Bosnia. They took Yugoslavia, split Austria and Hungary, two separate smaller nations, put Czechoslovakia up here, Poland up here, got part of Russia, and Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, and Finland. Romania got a big chunk of Austria-Hungary. Yugoslavia made up parts of Austria and Hungary, the nations of Bosnia, Montenegro, and Serbia. Czechoslovakia made up parts of the Austro-Hungary Empire. Poland was made up of parts of Germany, Hungary, and Russia. Lithuania made up parts of Russia. Latvia made up parts of Russia. Estonia made up parts of Russia. And Finland was made up of parts of Russia. Altogether, there were 27 countries that were either created as new countries or countries that gained new territory, like Romania, which is made much larger when it was granted land from Hungary. Could you imagine that? 27 countries. There were 9 countries that lost territory. The biggest changes: the end of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It not only lost its empire and its royalty, but the century-old empire was split into two separate nations. And most of its territory was given to Yugoslavia, Czechoslovakia, Romania, and Poland. But after the war, it kept its Jewish-owned usury central bank. Germany lost a large amount of territory. First, they lost the Alsace-Lorraine to France. Saarland and Rhineland was occupied as a demilitarized zone. Northern Schleswig was given to Denmark. Upper Silesia to Czechoslovakia and Poland. Upper-Mullandy to Belgium. Poland was given land to the Baltic Sea that divided Germany into two parts under the protection of the League of Nations. Germany also lost their islands in the Pacific and all their colonies in Africa. But after the war, Germany kept its Jewish-owned usury central bank. The British lost Ireland, which gained its independence. After the war, Great Britain kept its Jewish-owned usury central bank. Iceland became independent from Denmark in 1918 after the Germans occupied that nation. That was most of the changes, but there were a few more. The International Jewish Cabal, being a non-Christian, self-separated occult organization, had for centuries practiced financial control over the Europeans. However, they had trouble manipulating European royalty because these kings usually had their own wealth, such as the Russian czars. So to circumvent European royalty, they promoted democracy because they could use their wealth to influence elections and politicians. Do they do this in the United States? We saw it the last election. Another decision of the Treaty of Versailles was how much reparations Germany had to pay. It went from £2 billion from John Maynard Keynes, you probably know him, a British economist, to £27 billion from British Prime Minister David Lloyd George, to £338 billion from the men who were behind the war. The decision was $338 billion, which would take almost a century to pay the victors. Thus, the globalists, the Jews, locked the world into their agenda for another world war. I have a few questions. Was Satan locked in the bottomless pit at this time? Or, number two, had he been let loose and was deceiving the nations? Or number three, or is his time in the prison not until sometime in the future? That is, after the tribulation period is over. If he is to be in prison for 1,000 years of the future millennium that is ruled by Jews and Christian church members, two opposing forces with Almighty God. What did the peace treaty decide for Germany? Number one, Germany was forced to pay for all the costs, every single cost of the war. Number two, Germany lost a lot of its territory, even splitting the nation into two separate parts. Germany had to disarm. Germany had to give up all its overseas colonies. Germany had been a monarchy, but became a new state. It became a democratic republic. Germany kept its Jewish-owned central usury system. And seventh, Germany was declared war on by the Jews in 1933. And they said they were going to annihilate the Germans. Oh, the war started in 39. The Jews declared war in 1933. Who started World War II? It was the Jews, not the Nazis, that started World War II. Very few Americans think that they are laboring under a false impression when they think, quote, that this was a war to save democracy, unquote. It wasn't what the war is about. It was to save the Jewish lie that a Jewish usury bank was necessary for success in today's world. Germany had quickly demonstrated that the Jews were behind all the evilness that they tried to submit Germany to. The war was broadcast as a quote-unquote sacred war declared on Germany, not by the United States, not by Great Britain, not by France, not by any nation, but by the religion of the Jews. It was substantiated by a public address over a radio station by Mr. Samuel Untermeyer, an American Jew. He was speaking at the executive office of the World Jewish Economic Federation. Thus, at Amsterdam, Holland, at the meeting above referred to, at which Mr. Samuel Untermeyer was elected president of the World Jewish Economic Federation, a sacred war was declared against Germany to destroy Germany's very existence. Jews all over the world were ordered not to buy anything from Germany, not to patronize German merchants, not to deal with firms which sold German goods, not to ship on German boats. Mr. Untermeyer, speaking officially for all Jews in the world, unquote, what we are proposing and what we have already gone far towards doing, unquote, said that his organization would, quote, undermine the Hitler regime and bring the German people to their senses by destroying their import trade on which their very existence depends, unquote. It is true that Hitler ostracized many Jews from professional ranks, instituted in some instances concentration camps for what Hitler thought to be more dangerous Jews. But why did Hitler practice such extremities? All civilization knows that following the First World War, wealthy Jews from America, Britain, France, Holland, Galicia, and elsewhere moved into Germany with their valuable money and purchased property, which was represented by worthless, inflated German marks. Indeed, the Jews became the aristocrats of Germany, having confiscated through their monetary manipulations a great share of wealth that belonged not only to the 2 million members of the Nazi Party, but to the 50 million Catholics and Protestants who did not belong to the Nazi Party. What kind of government was given to Germany? What kind of government was given to Germany at the peace treaty after World War I? It was the government that was outlined at the beginning of this message. It was a democratic republic. Before and during the war, Germany was a monarchy. But shortly after the war was over, the monarch, Kaiser Wilhelm, abdicated. The new state that Germany was to operate under was this new government. It was called the Weimar Republic, a democratic republic. Maybe that was what President Wilson's cry meant when he said, quote, the war is being fought to save the world for democracies, unquote. So the International Community of Jews changed Germany from a monarchy to a constitutional democratic republic at the end of the war. Friedrich Ebert was thrust into position the first ever president of the Weimar Republic in 1919. The country's new semi-presidential system meant that Ebert had more power than a typical head of state, power which he used to issue numerous executive orders, does that ring a bell, and appoint two chancellors during a six-year tenure. Despite the blurred line between where the president's power ended and the chancellor's began, German democracy appeared relatively stable between 1919 and 1932, embracing policies of universal suffrage and a system of checks and balances that made Germany more liberal than any of its neighbors. My conclusion. Under the Weimar Republic, cultural Bolshevism, which is Jewishness, blossomed in Germany. Its hallmarks include the open promotion, one, of narcotic use. Is that happening here? Number two, sexual deviancy, such as homosexuality, transgenderism, etc. Is that happening here? Number three, pornography. Is that happening here? Number four, every other sort of decadence. Is that happening here? Such lifestyles are promoted in Jewish art, literature, cinema, and theater, which are in turn given the foremost exposure wherever Jews can control mass media. The same things are being promoted in the United States. However, the licentiousness of the Roaring Twenties was curtailed by the Great Depression. This promotion of decadence was one major evil which Adolf Hitler and his National Socialist Party fought their political battles against. Hitler also got rid of the Jewish usury National Bank. When Hitler won Germany democratically, the Jews rallied in the other nations to ensure that Germany, and perhaps the rest of Europe, would not be lost to their cause. Germany went from a third of its people being unemployed to full employment. They proved that no one needed the cursed central bank except for their owners, the Jews. Their propaganda of lies still carry on till today. At the time when the devil was loose from 1,000 years in the bottomless pit, the devil and his people began their deceptive practices. When Martin Luther attempted to reform the Catholic Church, the Amsterdam Jews asked the leader of the Protestant Reformation to establish a Judeo-Christian denomination. But Luther refused and instead exposed the Jews as being anti-Christian. The Jews next went after John Calvin, another Tulip believer. Calvin accepted Judaism's link to Christianity as God's chosen people and renounced the Catholic ban against usury. Christians today who believe what Martin Luther taught are not known as Lutherans, but Calvinists. I was a Calvinist. I do not like John Calvin. Later, Amsterdam's chief rabbi, Manasseh ben Israel, sanctioned Oliver Cromwell's Great Rebellion that overthrew and murdered King Charles I and eliminated English migration ban on the so-called God's chosen people. Calvinist Christians fleeing Catholic persecutions went to Amsterdam and collectively became known as the Puritans. In Amsterdam's 17th century attempt to claim a portion of America, they sent their Puritan colonists to settle New Amsterdam, New York, and Judeo-Christianity came America. It is the Jews that, number one, that are the instigator of problems in every Israelite nation. Number two, it is the Jews who are the parasites. Number three, it is the Jews who have changed the interpretation of Scripture. Number four, it is the Jews who oversee the politics of the nation. Number five, it is the Jews who are the money changers. Number six, it is the Jews who are the charger of usury on loans. Number seven, it is the Jews who are buying communism. Number eight, it is the Jews who make payoffs to the members of the government. Number nine, it is the Jews who lie constantly to Congress. Number 10, it is the Jews who are inventors of a life without God. Number 11, it is the Jews who want revenge even after 500 years. Number 12, it is the Jews who favor homosexuality and transsexualism. It is the Jews who instigate disagreements and wars. It is the Jews who finance wars, usually both sides. It is the Jews who hate Jesus the Christ. It is the Jews who hate the Christian church. It is the Jews who hate the followers of Christ. It is the Jews who take advantage of any sale on property because of bankruptcy or inflation. It is the Jews who, you can fill in the blanks yourself. I give you a quote. Nobody died in the Holocaust either. And that is the truth. 6 million Jews should die right now, but they won't, because they, the Jews, cause all the problems in the world. But it will never happen. This was spoken on YouTube tape in an interview on June 16, 2023, by Roseanne Barr, who's 100% Jew. Many times in Israel's history, the Israelites found themselves in a terrible place. For example, the house of Israel for centuries worshipped another god, the god of Baal. God continued to save and deliver his covenant people, not for their own sakes, but for his name's sake. He will honor and be faithful to the covenant that he made years ago with fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and his seed, even though his people will discard and be unfaithful to it. He will do it once again. To be continued, blessed be the Lord God of Israel.